Welcome to A Time of Hope with highlights of our service from last Sunday's worship. I'm Russell Cobb, the pastor at the United Church of Christ of California and the Salem United Church of Christ. You're always welcome at our Sunday services. Worship at Salem is at 8:30. Sunday school in California is at 9:30 with donuts, coffee, and juice available in the gym, followed by worship at 10:30. We have a nursery for your little ones. We would be privileged to have you attend our Sunday service as we worship together as one family serving Christ. This morning we continue our sermon series, Unshakable Hope. We will be in Hebrews chapter 4, verses 14 through 16, to see that Jesus understands us and can sympathize with our daily struggles since he was fully human. But he also helps us in our times of struggles with his mercy and his grace since he is fully divine. May God bless each of you with his mercy and his grace this coming week. We thank you for listening.
Our special music is a piano offering by one of our very youngest members, Emma Kissick. Beginning with a reading from the book of Proverbs, our pastor Russell Cobb will share scripture lessons and his Father's Day sermon, A Father's Love.
Listen to your father who gave you life, and do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy the truth and do not sell it, wisdom, instruction, and insight as well. The father of a righteous child has great joy. A man who fathers a wise son rejoices in him. May your father and mother rejoice. May she who gave you birth be joyful. Our second one is from Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. And then our gospel scripture will be from Luke chapter 15, where we'll be at this morning, verses 20 through 24. So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. We're going to be in Luke chapter 15 this morning, if you want to turn there. We're going to be looking at the story of the prodigal son, or as I like to call it, the story of a father's love. I've always wished you a happy Father's Day, and you know, sometimes we get the short end of the stick as fathers. And you know, I've already told you before that typically the only two times I get calls from my daughters are if they need money or if there's something wrong with the car. But the third one now, I've got a third one that I've come up with in just the last month or two. I get a call on my cell phone, and the first words out of the mouth of my daughter, I think it's usually Carrie, is, why isn't Mom answering her cell phone? That is now the third reason why they call me. You thought maybe I was going to say Happy Father's Day or Happy Birthday. No, that's way down their list, I think, on that. But no, those are things that they do. But I also wanted to bring with me some shirts that they've gotten me over the years. I wanted to share some of those shirts that they've gotten me over the years. I really like this one. All right. Being a grandpa and liking the fish, it says, Real Cool Grandpa. And real spelled like a fish. And real, I like that one a lot. And then, you know, all my kids, you know, have gone to college or finishing up college. So I've got a William Woods Dad shirt right here. I've got that one. Amy's at Mizzou right now. So, of course, I've got the Mizzou Dad T-shirt. All right. Carrie and Amy both went to Columbia College. Kelly took a couple classes there. So, of course, I've got the Columbia College Dad T-shirt. You know, all my kids went to college, and all I got was a T-shirt, so for them to go to college. And one I like here is probably one of my favorites, Gannon's grandpa. Is Gannon still here? Is he still around? Or is he ran up? There he is right there. I got Gannon's grandpa. He's on the phone, I'm sure, to keep him quiet. All right. This is one here that they never liked this little joke. They would roll their eyes. I don't think they ever laughed once. But they got me a couple shirts printed that had some of their sayings that they remember me saying. They would say to me, you know, hey, Dad, I'm hungry. And I would respond, hey, hungry, I'm Dad. They didn't think that was very funny. I don't think they don't think it's funny right now either. And for every father that's here, this is our go-to statement. When they come and ask us a question, of course, what do we say? Go ask your mom, all right? So I've got those. I've not really worn these out in public. If I've worn them, I've worn them at home. But I've kept them there for sure. So, you know, Father, sometimes we get the short end of the stick on some of these things. I was looking up bad dad jokes this week, you know, because my dad would say a couple ones to me, and I would never laugh, but he would laugh. But here's a couple jokes here. What do you call a bear without any teeth? A gummy bear. See, a kid gets it, all right? All right, he got that one. My dad said this one, why did the scarecrow win an award? He was outstanding in his field. Think about it, all right? Some of these are agricultural, so I'm sure the ag guys will get this. What do you call a pony with a cough? A little horse, all right? What did the horse say when he fell down? I can't giddy up, all right? I like this one because some of my girls played softball. Why did they kick Cinderella off the softball team? She kept running away from the ball. I like that one. Yeah, see, you'll get it, all right? What do you call a cow with no legs, Tony? Ground beef, all right? You call them ground beef. My dad would say this, when he would go fishing without me as a kid and he'd get home, I'd say, Dad, you know, where'd you catch the fish this time? And he'd go, right here. He'd say he thought that was real funny. All right. What kind of shoes do frogs wear? Open-toed. Think about it. All right. Did you know the first French fries weren't cooked in France? They were cooked in Greece. All right. Why is the mushroom always invited to parties? He's a fun guy. I like this one. What do you call a fake noodle? An impasta. He's an impasta. What did the duck say when he bought lipstick? Put it on my bill. All right, here's our religious one for the day. Where do you go to learn to make ice cream? Sunday school. You go to Sunday school. And then finally, what do you call a pig that does karate? A pork chop. All right, you got a pig that does karate, pork chop. All right, enough of those bad jokes for the day. But we have lots of examples of fathers from the Bible, don't we? We have Jacob, probably not the best of fathers. He favored one child over the other so much that the brothers took him off. They kidnapped him. They sold him into slavery and told the dad that he had been killed. And so, you know, that was all because that the brothers were jealous of their youngest brother. King David had all kinds of trouble raising children because of decisions that he had made. He had one son that took advantage of his half-sister, and then another brother killed that brother because he was avenging what happened to his sister. And then that same brother tried to overthrow King David, and so he had all kinds of problems raising his children. But as I was reading and preparing for this, I came across the father in the New Testament that really is probably one of my favorites in Mark chapter 9. We don't have a name for him, but we see him bring his demon-possessed son to Jesus. It said that the boy had been sick since he was a little boy. He threw himself on the ground. He foamed at the mouth. He gnashed at the teeth. He became rigid. He threw himself into fire, into water, trying to kill himself. And this father's at the end of his rope. He doesn't know what to do. So what does he do? He brings the boy to Jesus. And he comes to Jesus and he says, you know, take pity on us. If there's any way that you can help us, please help us if you can. And Jesus looks at him and says, everything is possible with one who believes. You know, if I can, says, just believe. And immediately the boy's father exclaimed, I do believe, and help me overcome my belief, he said. And then Jesus rebuked the impure spirit, cast the spirit out, and that boy was healed from that moment on. But that father was willing to do whatever it took to heal his little boy, just like what we do to make sure that our little ones get well when they're hurting or something is wrong with them. When we come to Luke chapter 15, we see a series of three stories, very famous stories: the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. And each one has a little variance with it. The sheep just wander off. But we see that the shepherd chases him down and brings him back, and they celebrate. The coin didn't get lost because the coin got lost. The coin got lost because someone lost it. But we see that the lady cleans everything, looks there, and finally finds the coin and is excited to find what she had lost. But now we come to the son. A little bit more involved story. You know, he's there, he's watched his older brother, he's watched his family, he decides that he's old enough now to take off and go do his thing, so he asks for his share. The father gives him his share, he goes off, and you know the rest of the story. He spends it on wild living, a famine sets in, he finds himself working with hogs and longing to eat what the hogs would have, and he finally decides, I'm going to go back to my father because I could at least be one of his servants. But what brought the son home? What did he remember that would bring him home in the midst of great struggle and chaos? He remembered his father's love. But he also remembered he remembered his father's passion. Growing up, I'm sure he saw the passion that his father had for working with his children. I'm sure they worked side by side, and we've seen a lot of passion in the last week. If you've been watching anything about the Blues, and yesterday was the parade that went all through St. Louis, thousands of people showed up in St. Louis. I had friends that live in different parts of the state. They drove to St. Louis to be part of the parade to celebrate the Blues winning the Stanley Cup in the NHL Hockey Championship. So we saw lots of passion there. But we see here this passion that this father had for his son. He provided for his son. The son knew that his dad had wealth, and so it got to be his time. It was time for him to take off because the father knew that children were a blessing to him. We see Psalm 127 says, children are a heritage from the Lord, offspring a reward from him. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. I'm sure over all the years the young man grew up under his father's eye, there was many times that the father gave him the things that he needed. And Jesus talked about this in Matthew chapter 7. He says, which of you, if your son asks for bread, will give him a stone, or if he asks for a fish, will give him a snake? If you then are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children. How much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask of him? When you have something, a passion for something, you provide physically for it. You spend time with it, or you spend money on it. And we see that with the father here. He had built up resources that the son knew about, and he was willing to share it with his son. You know, but the thing that we do when we spend time with our children, We're giving them our most precious commodity, us. It's more than just coaching their teams. It's asking about their day. It's being there for their lows and their hurts, their highs, their successes. You know, my dad coached my little league teams. He played catch with me when I was little. I can still remember us playing catch in the yard up in, I think, Madison, Indiana. And for some reason, I remember this. He bent over to get the ball. I made a bad throw, and his pants split. And I don't know why I remember that, but I remember that scene of playing catch. I know my dad doesn't remember it at all. I've been fishing with my dad since I was very little with a cane pole, and I still fish with him today. I know some of the times he would take me so he could just have another person in the boat so he could legally catch another limit of crappie, and that was my reason to be there, but we spent time together. And we see the father here cared about lost things. He never gave up looking or visualizing the moment he would see his son coming over the hill back to where he grew up. Look how the father responds when he sees his son. He runs to him. He hugs him. He kisses him. He threw his arms around him. He gave his son physical love. It's important when we're passionate about our children that we show them physical love. We tell them that we love them. We show them physically that we love them, because when we have passion about something, we love it. But we also provide spiritual love for our children. You know, there wasn't a lot to be proud of for the prodigal son returning home. He wasn't graduating from college. He had not cured any cancer. He had not won any titles. He had not done anything successful. He was coming back humbled and humiliated. But how many times do you think that father prayed for his son while he was gone? How many times did he wonder where he was at or what he was doing or if he was even still alive? But the father faithfully prayed for his son and looked for his son throughout the day. So when we have passion for our children, we provide for them physically, and we also provide for them spiritually. Physical love and spiritual love show passion for our children. He had left his father against his advice. He had lost everything. He was working at the lowest of jobs. But his father's passion saw him all through that and brought him home. The second thing that brought him home that he remembered not only was his passion from his father, but his father's instruction. You know, how many times did he work with his father, probably doing chores on the farm, and see all the work and the lessons that his father had taught him? We see that the son must have been a worker because he hired himself out when things got bad. But what kind of instructions do we learn from our fathers? You know, I like to watch American Pickers, and invariably when they're going from shed to shed and they're talking with the people whose property they're on or what building they're in, they'll ask them, how did you get started collecting all these things? Or how did you get all this stuff? And invariably, he says, I was with my father. I was with my mother, and we went to an estate sale. We worked on cars all of our lives, or we went to races, or we did this thing or that thing. I've heard many people talk about their memories of learning from their father, whether it be working on a tractor or a car or working with livestock, playing catch, hitting a ball, shooting a basket, working with wood, cooking on the grill, learning how to tie a hook, or whatever special thing you learned from your father. You know, I struggled many times learning things from my father because I wasn't very patient. I'd rather be out playing ball or running around, and my dad could do anything. You know, he's a jack of all trades, he says, a master of none. And I wasn't patient enough to learn all those different skills, and boy, I wish I would have paid a lot more attention back in those days right now. But it reminds me of the Mark Twain quote. He says, when I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant, I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much the old man had learned in 7 years. Isn't that the way we are when we're young and then we get married? My mom and dad got real smart the day I got married when I turned 22, for sure. But I read this quote, and it's really stuck with me. My youth minister put this on his Facebook page this week, and it's by a man named Vadi Bakum, and it's in your bulletin. He's written different books about faith and family, and probably the book that I'd like to read, my favorite title is What He Must Be If He's Going to Marry My Daughter. I like the title of that book. But this is what he said about his children. He said, if I teach my son to keep his eye on the ball, but fail to teach him to keep his eyes on Christ, I have failed as a father. Man, that's a humbling statement, isn't it? That makes you sit back and kind of evaluate the things that you're focusing on. You know, I'll see many children fall in the footsteps of their parents to be teachers or farmers or vets or going to the family business or other professions. And that makes a father proud. But along with teaching them skills and vocations, the importance of father being the teacher of spiritual things can't be overstated. being a Sunday school teacher, a youth group leader, talking at home about the Sunday school lesson or sermon. We see Joseph and Mary actively involved in Jesus' life when it says Jesus grew up in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. But along with all the life skills, are we passing on spiritual leadership to our children? Do they see us making Bible reading a priority? Do they see us reading or praying and teaching them to pray in all areas of their lives? Are we leading them to church on Sundays? The home and the church need to work together in spiritual training to get the best results for our children. We see the prodigal father gave his son faithful guidance. You might say, well, his guidance didn't work out too well because the prodigal son took off and went. Well, maybe you can look at it another way. Maybe the prodigal son was so confident in the instruction that he got that he was arrogant that he could go do it on his own. But in either case, he remembered the godly words of his father. He knew his father loved him. He knew the words he had heard for years growing up were true. It says that he came to his senses. I think that means when reality impresses upon you words or guidance that you've discarded over your past. I think that's happened a lot with this prodigal son here. Those things that he kind of just put in the back of his mind, all of a sudden they came to his forefront and said, you know what, maybe Dad was smart after all. We see in Ephesians chapter 6 when he says, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Children need to know that spiritual training is important, that reading the Bible is the foundation of our faith. Because of that instruction, we see the prodigal son remembers that instruction. I think we see what Mark Twain was talking about in that instance. That's why a father's love for his children must include godly instruction. And then the last thing we see there, I think, that led the prodigal son back home is he remembered his father's godly example of grace and forgiveness. Remember what he says. He repeats the mantra over and over again as he's coming back to see his father. You know, Father, you know, just bring me on as one of your servants. I'm no longer, you know, worthy to be called your son. And he says he's seen a dad, though, that had been given grace and forgiveness. I'm sure with the workers, he had seen his dad do this over his lifetime with people that he engaged with and also with other people in the family. His father just didn't give godly guidance, but he lived it as well. You know, there are going to be times when we make mistakes as parents, as fathers. You know, I hope my good days have outweighed my bad days. I hope I haven't left too many permanent scars on my daughters. And I hope my consistent life of faith has made a difference. But you know, there are going to be times when forgiveness and grace will need to be exercised as a parent and a child. Just like the prodigal son, our children will and have made decisions that we don't agree with. And they will continue to do that. But we have to have forgiveness in our hearts when we see our children striving to do better or make amends. We see that from the prodigal son, and we see it from his father. But the importance of a father's faith cannot be overstated. They've done a couple surveys over the years that if a father attends church or attends Sunday school, these are the stats. If a mother goes to church only and a father doesn't, only 1 in 5 children will become regular church worshipers. But if a father comes regardless of the mother's attendance, 2/3 to 3/4 of children will attend church as adults. And if the father attends irregularly, between 1/2 and 2/3 of their kids will attend church with some regularity as adults. Fathers, when you make that a priority, it makes a difference, not only with your children, but for generations to come. Another survey found that if a child is the first person in a family to become a Christian, there's a 3% chance that the rest of the family will become a Christian. If the mother is first, 17% chance that the others will follow. But if the father is the first to become a Christian, 90% chance that all others in the household will follow their lead. It was huge in the life of the prodigal son, and he had seen his godly example of his father, and now he experienced it firsthand. Proverbs 22 tells us, the father of a righteous child has great joy. A man who fathers a wise son rejoices in him. You know, what are your children picking up? I brought a newspaper with me this morning. The Eldon Advertiser. I want to make sure I don't catch it on fire over here on the thing over here. But it's the article right after the tornado a couple weeks ago. And I was just looking through it. Dad let me look through it. And there happened to be a picture. You guys can't see it. I'll show it to you afterwards. But this is the this is the words underneath. It says, Eldon's Live Club member Jack Cobb barbecuing for Willow Creek residents Friday, May 24th. My dad didn't tell me about this. I just happened to see it in the paper.
I'm sure you probably need this back to cut it out and put it in your records, I'm sure, because Dad's Lions, he's always cutting out stuff for Lions. But that's, you know, in our household, we really don't brag on each other too much. We kind of go by the proverb. We let other people brag on us. But that's what my dad has done. He's done that kind of service over his year. You know, he don't blow his own horn. But my dad has set an example of service and consistency in his life and in his marriage. The story was told about a father who overheard his son pray, "Dear God, make me the kind of man my daddy is." Later that night, the father prayed, "Dear God, make me the kind of man my son wants me to be." The prodigal son had seen his father provide for his employees and his workers. He'd experienced firsthand the grace and forgiveness of his father. You know, we see the consequences through the Bible of the unforgiveness of others. We saw it in the life of David and how it ruined his relationship with Absalom, his son. You can see the prodigal son rehearsed his speech every step of the way before he got to his father. And as a father, he was hurt by his son's disobedience, I'm sure, and by his impulsiveness, but he had grace and forgiveness in his heart for his return. How many relationships have been crushed by the unwillingness to forgive, to hold on to past hurts? Forgiveness works on our relationship with God, and it works just as well with our relationship with each other and our family. His father's godly example of grace and forgiveness led him back home. I always try to read the chapter or the verses every day before I get ready for a sermon. And I was reading again last night, and the first two verses of Luke 15, I encourage you to read the chapter this week. Who was Jesus speaking this parable with? Who were surrounding him when he told this parable? If you look at the first two verses, you'll see. He was surrounded by sinners, tax collectors, and the religious leaders and the Pharisees who said, "Look who Jesus is associated with." That's the story he told the parable of the prodigal son to. People who probably thought that they were lost. That is the story of the prodigal son. It's a story of love of our Heavenly Father for each one of us. It's never too late for anyone of us to come to the Father. We're more important than sheep or a coin. And it's not too late to become the father or the grandfather that God wants you to be. For those that no longer have their fathers with them, I hope you remember with joy the memories that come to mind when you think about your father on Father's Day. I hope you've included in your life the characteristics that made a difference in your life from your father. I was watching an episode of Mike Rowe. He has a show on Facebook called Returning to Favor. I've mentioned it at different times. And this last one was about an 82-year-old gentleman in Royce City, Texas. His name's Barney Jones. If you want to look it up, it's really neat. But he spends most of his life ministering to seniors in his community, taking them here and there, buying them cards for their birthday, taking care of the cemetery. He spends $1,000 a month ministering to others in his community. And while they were standing at the cemetery, he was explaining to Mike that it took him 2 days to put flags on all the headstones in the cemetery. And then Mike asked him about his own death. He said, "Barney, how do you want to be remembered?" And he said simply, he says, "I want to live a life that I missed when I'm gone." And I go, "Well, you know, okay, I understand that. But I'd like to add something to that. I not only want to live a life that I miss when I'm gone, but I want to live a life that left an example for my family." This has been an unusual week for the church here. We had visitation on Thursday. We had a funeral on Friday. We had a wedding rehearsal on Friday night and a wedding on Saturday for the Kyle, the Burger, and the Mouse family. And all I heard was how wonderful Bob Kyle was. Man, it was wonderful to hear every single story about him. But when I was visiting with the family at their house and Amy was talking to me about Bob and his faith, she said, "We were in church every Sunday. Church was important to Bob. And he was in church not even a month ago. His last Sunday here was Sunday, May 19th. He loved his family and he loved this church so much. His funeral and Austin's wedding this happened this week, but through their tears, they can take heart that Bob's faith has been rewarded with his crown of righteousness, but he's left each of them a father and grandfather's example of faith and family to follow." And that's my encouragement to each one of you here. The story of the prodigal son gives each one of us hope.